You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
Mediocrity to me is death. Like, it's like, yeah, you're there and you play a playoff round here and there, but like, I'd like to see a step above. And again, you have to, I think, now take a step back in order to take two forward.
Strong words from Yannick Hansen earlier today on Sportsnet 650. You can find the full interview at sportsnet.ca/650. Welcome in. It's the People Show. Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda sat taking a maintenance day. And sending your wrong answers only on Sat's maintenance day. 650, 650.
Should be some good ones there.
Should be.
What wrong answers only. What does Sat do on his maintenance day?
Not think about the Canucks. You know what's funny about last night's game? How bad it was.
Oh, yeah. Terrible hockey. That game tape is not being sent to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Okay, Canucks fans, honestly. I know you feel terrible about your team and how bad they've looked.
Yeah.
But did it make you kind of chuckle when you saw Montreal play that hockey? Like, just everybody giving up the puck in their in their defensive zone.
Hey, team! A team that looks like us!
Brendan Gallagher, one of my favorite players in the NHL.
Yeah.
I love what he brings. He's just gritty.
Galley.
Galley's a good dude. But what he was doing on the ice last night, like, multiple giveaways in the first period. Multiple in the second period in the defensive zone. It was ugly, man.
Yeah.
They had, like, five Tucker Pullmans on the ice at once!
It's not the team we saw in the playoffs, that's for sure. Sportsnet 650 is the People Show, presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Winter tire service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. A lot of discussion on our Dunbar Lumber text line. We love hearing from the people. We will get back into that. David Pignota of the fourth period is going to join us in a few moments. Canucks get the Ottawa Senators tomorrow. Elias Pettersson maybe coming out of his slumber. We'll talk to Harmon Dial about that in a little bit.
Dial. Yeah, I have to correct you here.
Every time. Please do it every time.
Respect to Raja, because I was listening to him a couple of months ago, actually, and he said Harmon's name correctly. So I have to step in here and say Harmon Dial.
Am I the influencer on that, Raja?
No.
No. I'd like to think that I was.
You know, people said names correctly before you stepped in.
not always.
Okay, we'll give it to you. We'll allow it.
Harmon Dial will join us.
Better already.
After 5 o'clock. All right, let's bring in our next guest, David Pignota. He's not ready. Oh, my bad. Getting my mixed signals here from producer Raja Shergo. All right, we'll get that on the board. Elias Pettersson. Is playing better. We'll talk to Harm about that. Jake DeBrusque rumors. I know immediately, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but immediately when a player comes out on the market, every team's fan base does this. Should we be in on trade talks for that player? Should we be in for Jake DeBrusque? You wonder about that. We'll get to that with our next guest. It is David Pignota of the fourth period. What's up, Dave?
How's it going, boys?
Brilliant, man. Canucks won a game.
Oh, man, it's ugly out here. It's raining, though. It is brutal.
Are those the Canucks fans' tears, or?
Vancouver is crying
today. Montreal Canadiens fans' tears.
There's a little bit of everything right now. Our listeners... And bless them. Some of them still think that the playoffs are a realistic chance for teams like, I guess, the Canucks and the Habs, for that matter. Okay, they're only 9 points out, but, you know, here we are past American Thanksgiving. It's just unrealistic to think the Canucks are going to go on the kind of run they need to go on now to get into the just into the playoff conversation again.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's not just a matter of being, you know, however many points back, it's how many teams are in front of them.
Yeah.
So it's not just, okay, we're 8 points, we're 9 points back. We're seven. There's some light at the end of the tunnel. Well, yeah, you are. But then LA's in the mix. Dallas is in the mix. Nashville's in the mix. The Sharks are doing all right. You got to hop over all those teams. So this hole that's been dug is, I mean, historically speaking, it just doesn't happen. Could it? Sure, I guess. The Habs and Canucks could meet in the Stanley Cup final. I'm sure it's possible. But realistically, I don't know if I would advise putting anything down on that potential bet.
Yeah, that's a futures bet nobody wants to take right now, Dave, on that one. I think you're staying away from that one. But, you know, seeing what happened in Montreal after they beat Pittsburgh on Saturday night, there was a lot of movement going on. And, you know, in Vancouver, people are wondering, okay, what's the holdup here? What's the point in waiting? Is that a valid opinion to have, or is it, you know, better to take it slow and steady at this point just to make sure you make the right move rather than a move?
Well, that's exactly what they're trying to do, is make the right moves and not just moves for the sake of it. Because I do suspect there will be multiple when, you know, we get to the end of the road, whether it's this week, next week, in a few months. I think there will be a few changes that are going to have to happen and that are being discussed and planned out. You know, Montreal moved relatively quickly. It took about 8 days before they started to finalize everything. I believe Jeff Molson, the owner of the Habs, said that they finalized things on Saturday, and that's basically, you know, a few hours later, that's when things started to break. It took little over a week for that to transpire. My understanding is the Canucks have been working on trying to figure out what changes they need to make for well over a week. I mean, this has been going on for some time here. And again, it's a matter of what are the right moves versus just making a hasty one at this stage. You know, if you let go of Travis Green, can you find a replacement immediately? Is it Bradshaw? Is it somebody else out there? I mean, this is everything that has to be calculated and discussed and analyzed, and who else is available that's out there. Do the changes in Montreal, do they affect what happens with the Vancouver Canucks moving forward? Do Marc Bergevin or Scott Mellenby pique any interest from a Canucks perspective in a managerial position? I mean, all of these things are coming into play, and whether you make a move today after a win yesterday, or you make a move tomorrow after whatever the outcome is going to be against Ottawa, it's not going to make that much of a difference in the grand scheme of things. It's about getting this right, and that's the message that the Canadians tried to put out. The Aquilinis would certainly like to do the same thing, but again, they hear it, they hear everything, they see it, but it's a matter of getting it right. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and I get that. It just feels unfair to Jim Benning and Travis Green to some level, especially in this market, Dave, right? Like, with all the speculation surrounding it and pretty much, you know, the way it's been reported is they're actively looking for the replacements of those two. And it's just, it feels really unfair to those two specific individuals.
Well, my understanding is they're aware. I mean, I don't think they've been left in the dark. And right. I think because of all this speculation, from what I've heard, is that both of those individuals have been made aware that there could be a change coming. You know, we don't want to keep you in the dark. You're hearing all the rumors, all the speculation. Here's what's going on. Can we say for certain if something will happen, when something will happen? It's no, but I can tell you both of these guys are aware that something could drop. So this isn't something that's coming out of left field and they're being told, nah, don't listen to all that speculation in the media and all that stuff. That's not the case. So it certainly doesn't make the day-to-day any easier by any stretch for either of these guys. And you know, I feel for them because in anybody in that position, whether it's hockey or whether it's, you know, you're an accountant and you're hearing the whispers that somebody's, you know, they're going to axe the department or something like that, it's never easy. But this isn't something that has surprised either of these guys. It's just, again, I think changes are going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And my understanding is they're both aware of it.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by David Pignota of the Fourth Period. And Dave, you did mention, you know, the Montreal situation. There's plenty of fallout. It could affect other markets as well. Let's start with one individual that Vancouver knows pretty well. Scott Mellanby was a part of the Mike Gillis regime here in Vancouver for 3 years. When we look at this individual and, you know, resigning that position in Montreal as the AGM, do you think there's going to be a lot of interest in his services going forward here?
Absolutely. I mean, there was beforehand. You know, he was somebody that the Pittsburgh Penguins wanted to talk about, and he respectfully said, no, thanks, I'm good where I'm at. Now, partially because his salary was a pretty nice one, my understanding is that that was the case in Montreal, to be an AGM, but he was also, and the reports out there are accurate, that he was led to believe that he was going to get another position up in the Canadiens organization, whether it was to replace Marc Bergevin as GM or a higher up position. Obviously, Jeff Molson changed his mind. He wanted a different voice. That's why Mellanby's out. Trevor Timmins is out. He's been there for 20-plus years with the organization. And, of course, Bergevin is out. There's going to be a lot of interest in Scott Mellanby, whether it's Vancouver, whether it's Anaheim, whether it's Chicago, or another team that's potentially looking to make a change from the GM position. He's going to draw a lot of interest. He's somebody that has served time, has certainly learned along the way, and is that next one of the next up and coming GMs in the NHL. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he does become part of the mix here in terms of the Canucks potentially looking at him as a replacement for Jim Benning down the road.
Who do you think's on Montreal's for sale list should they go down that road? I mean, it seems like they will be going down that road at least this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not that simple of a situation in Montreal because a lot of guys are signed beyond this season. I think outside of Ben Chiarot, I think there's two other guys that are in the final year of their contracts in terms of being unrestricted free agents next summer.
Yeah.
After that, I think it's Jonathan Drouin who has one more year left. And then, I mean, it's multiple years for the rest of that group. So it's a tough task if you want to sell and go through a rebuild. Now, they've put out the message that Jeff Gorton, who I think gets to Montreal tonight or tomorrow morning, is him and whoever the GM is going to be are going to work hand-in-hand in determining what the appropriate direction of this team is. Now, for the time being, like the Canucks, the playoffs are way down that road, and it seems tremendously unlikely. So can we see Ben Chiarot move out at some point? Probably. Is Matthew Perreault probably going to be dealt? Most likely Cedric Paquette. Those kinds of pieces. Other than that, again, there are players that are signed beyond this season, and that adds value. But I don't know where the Canadiens are at this stage in terms of shopping guys like Drouin or guys with term like Toffoli or Josh Anderson or you know, even Jeff Petrie.
I know we've talked a lot about Anaheim and what they're going to do with their, you know, their next move at the executive level, but the LA Kings also are a pretty interesting team. Rob Blake does not have a contract extension in place at this point in time. You know, what's your sense with that organization? Because it feels like they're starting to turn a corner here, but is Rob Blake the guy that they're going to lean on to make that next move?
I'm not entirely sure, guys. It's a great question. You know, the Kings have been a team that have preached a little bit of patience when they started to rebuild. And they've got all these highly touted prospects for years that, you know, the last two, three seasons that have put them at the top of the class in terms of their prospect pool. We've just been waiting to see, okay, when are these guys actually going to be inserted into the lineup? And this is the first season where that's actually been the case, other than Gabe Vilardi last year, whom they decided to put into the lineup, excuse me. He's back in the A for the time being. I think he's getting readjusted to playing the wing. I think that's the right move for the LA Kings, especially with Kopitar, Deno, and then Quinton Byfield, who's likely to play full NHL minutes this season when he comes back from injury. Your center position is pretty bulky. So to put Vilardi on the wing and then to continue to give ice time to Kaliev and some of their other younger studs on this team, Turcotte's another guy that is on the up and up for this club. And all of this has been done under Rob Blake effectively. I mean, Jeff Solomon played a factor in that as well, who's now the interim GM in Anaheim. But Rob Blake has really shaped that club. There, again, a lot of question marks as to whether these kids were going to perform. they're doing pretty decently right now with the LA Kings. So if they can continue to develop, and we see Quinton Byfield do really well, then you got a heck of an argument to say, I deserve another contract and to see this thing out at least for the next 3 to 4 to 5 years. But I think for LA, they're going to see how this continues to develop. My understanding is there isn't really much of a rush or concern to get him locked into a new deal. So which typically means that both sides are comfortable in whatever they've already discussed. I don't think this is a similar situation to what Bergevin was in Montreal in terms of lame duck scenario. I think they just want to wait, see how things go, and then they'll get to it later on.
Now, one of the big moves of the day, kind of surprising, Jack Hughes back in the Devils lineup today, and he's celebrating with 64 sheets. 8x8 is what he gets from the Devils. I'm kind of surprised this happened this early, and it's one of those deals that if Jack Hughes continues progressing and playing the way he was earlier this year, might look like a steal for the Devils.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the consensus across the board, talking to a lot of people around the league. They feel that same way. But, you know, for everything that, you know, we've gone through the last couple of years, and with some of the uncertainty moving forward, although the future definitely looks tremendously bright from an NHL perspective, getting him locked into a term deal at 20 years old makes sense, because he's going to be 28 when that contract expires, and he'll be able to do it all over again, providing he certainly continues to develop the way everybody anticipates him to. So kind of big money, and it is a good sign to see, at least from an NHL side of things, that we're seeing younger players making that type of bank, I guess, right off the bat after their entry-level contract. We saw it with a lot of defensemen cashing in. Maybe this starts to set the tone a little bit for top-tier forwards, that are heading out of their entry-level deal. I like it overall because I'm sure that Jack's confident enough that he'll be able to cash in big time on his next one at just 28, which will pretty much put him right at the peak of his career, which is prime time in terms of trying to get a new deal.
Well, yesterday we did hear that Jake DeBrusk and the Boston Bruins are working on a move to maybe find him greener pastures or a better opportunity. And if you look at across the league, what situations make sense for you, what teams, and what's the price here for Jake DeBrusk?
This story has been – this is an interesting one, because this is something that has been going on since last season. You know, the Bruins knew he wasn't happy with his scenario and his situation in Boston. They explored, they looked, they said, maybe we can package you, maybe we can try to – they weren't really eager to try to move him when he was clearly discontent with his situation there. It continued in the offseason, and he started to voice those concerns even more as the season progressed. And just over the weekend was just a tipping point. He had family in town. They expected to see him to play. He knew he was being bounced in and out of the lineup, but he was supposed to play on Sunday. It didn't happen. And he just said, all right, let's just call it what it is, figure out a new home. The biggest issue in terms of trying to trade him, and there is a lot of interest. I think there's 10, 11 teams that I'm aware of that have reached out in the last few days. His money, his cap hit could potentially be a bit of an issue in terms of trying to make a deal this season. He's an RFA at the end of it, but right now, because he's at 3.625 or 675 or something, 3.6 something. That's a little bit hefty for a guy that only has 6 points on the season right now. Again, there's a lot of interest and there's belief that he can get back to that 20 goal mark that he had in his sophomore season with the Boston Bruins a few years back. But obviously teams aren't going to overpay for that potential. They're going to pay for what they've got now. And the dollar is a bit of an issue. Now, the Canucks have reached out in the past. I believe there's been some type of conversation recently. In the last couple of days, I don't know if it's really gotten too far. Edmonton's out there. Calgary's out there. The Rangers have inquired. I believe there's, like I said, up to 10, 11 teams that I'm aware of that have reached out. I'm curious to see where this goes, but this isn't something that just happened in the last few days. Teams have known that he's been quote unquote available going back to last season, but sometimes you got to really push. And that seems to be what him and his agent have done in these last 72 hours or so.
Trades this year, as much as any other or more than any other, has to be dollar in, dollar out, right? Like it's going to make the deadline really weird, or it feels like really, it's going to be difficult to navigate for a lot of teams.
For the most part, especially at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
You know, there are teams that are willing to retain some money and be incentivized to do so. Arizona sticks out as still a team that's, you know, certainly willing to do that. I believe Buffalo is as well to a certain extent. You know, Detroit has done it in the last couple of seasons. Would they do it again? So there are some options in terms of teams trying to get a little bit creative. I would imagine Seattle to a certain extent as well would be willing, if they can, you know, load up on a couple extra draft picks and things like that, to help facilitate a move. And whether that's a DeBrusque, whether that's a Vander Kane, because they're trying to explore all their options there from a dollar perspective. If you want to get creative, there are teams that are willing to do it, but you've got to pay for that. So you're right. I think it does make things complicated, especially closer to the deadline, and even more so now. But teams are aware of this because this is almost 2 years consecutive that they've had to deal with this. And you can get a little bit creative when push comes to shove. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some interesting moves happen in these months and weeks leading up to that trade deadline in March.
Final thing, NHL sending out a memo about holiday parties and things of that nature as COVID continues to be a concern and the new variant causing raised concern as well around the league and around the world. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for the way forward for the NHL, the All-Star game, the potential participation in the Olympics? Is it too early to say?
Thankfully, it's a little early to say because we're just getting into December, and you know, the decision in terms of Olympics and all that stuff doesn't have to be made really until January 10th. That's a drop dead date in terms of the players potentially opting out from Olympic play. And you obviously have, as you mentioned, the All-Star game beginning of February and all that stuff. So the league is trying to get ahead of this now. The signs were there. They took a little bit of time with the New York Islanders, and the Islanders tried to get their games against or prior to when they were canceled to get them postponed earlier. The league wouldn't do it. Cases went up, and, you know, here we are. The league decided, okay, it's time to just reiterate things to teams. I do know and can tell you that there are teams. The league isn't pushing, and the NHLPA aren't pushing the boosters on third shots or whatever you want to call it to the rest of the membership, but they are available for a lot of teams right now. I know last week some teams started to implement them. If you want to sign up to get one, we'll make it happen. Some teams have brought in the physicians in order to do it for anybody that wants to do it on practice days. So it's there if players want it. It's not being mandated. It's not really highly, I mean, again, they're not being pushed, but it's there if they want it. And the league is trying to push that awareness that if you want the extra one, get it because we have it for you, so that they can avoid potential, further breaks to the schedule, potentially missing All-Star, potentially missing Olympics, all of that stuff. So they're trying to get ahead of this. But again, then you have a lot of players questioning, well, what do we get the shots for and this, that, and the other. So it's a tricky situation. It's a tough one, but the league is trying to get ahead of it so that they don't have to postpone more games. The All-Star game is moving ahead. They're changing locations, and the parameters of All-Star will shift as well. They wanted to have guys on the strip doing fun stuff. Doesn't look like that's going to happen at this point, providing the Olympics are still in the equation. Players are shifting hotels to get closer to the rink. All of these little things are kicking in, but it's happening now versus a month from now, which, again, the league is trying to get a head start on all of these items because they just don't want that last-minute worst-case scenario to kick in.
What's your favorite panettone?
Listen, I've been trying to find – I can't remember which one it is, but there's this melted chocolate something or other inside. I can't – the okay. Raisins and the fruits and all that.
No.
Come on, please. No.
No.
You need the nice chocolate inside that basically melts in your mouth. That I've been trying to find that for years. It's driving me crazy.
You got to go bocce or nothing else. So,
you're right. Warm it up a little bit.
That's it.
Now we're talking.
We'll see you soon. Thanks for this.
All right. Take care, boys.
There he is, David Pagnotta of the fourth period.
I feel like I haven't gone out to North Burnaby or, like, you know, up Hastings, of course. The Heights, not and commercial drive enough to, I got to experiment with the Panettone.
I mean, you were having a decadent cake last night.
Yeah, that was elite.
I mean, that was, I didn't even know they made that. We were talking about it last week with Adnan.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I see Randeep pulling out the decadent chocolate chip cookie cake.
It's a pie, technically.
A pie?
Yeah, it's a pie cake. I don't know what it is. My sister brought it. Shouts to the really MVP in this situation.
Looked really rich and heavy.
It was, okay. It was good.
Okay.
Better.
Is it like ice cream cake or?
You have ice cream with it.
Oh.
It's there's like a chocolate chip kind of filling. They've got other things in there. Okay. Pecan is in there as well.
So what, you like pop it in the oven, get it nice
pop
and warm?
In the oven. So I had it kind of cool, actually. Yeah. Not really hot.
All right.
It actually tastes better, I think.
Mm.
A little cooler. So if you're looking for a quality dessert, I did tweet that out yesterday. People like, give us a review. How is it? It's pretty elite. You have it with ice cream? Woo. Like, I would not suggest it all the time.
Yeah.
But man, if you got company over and you're looking for like an easy dessert, that was an elite, elite play by my sister.
And it's very Canadian, you know, the decadent.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. Still, like, Panettone, though. I mean, I don't have this problem as I did in Woodbridge, where you're just, like, getting covered in Panettone. Because everybody around the family just brings each other Panettone.
You're getting inundated with from every angle.
Yeah. Okay. The most thing gifted in Italian families is re-gifted Panettone from previous years.
Okay. I can understand that. We have that similar thing in our Punjabi household, where it's just, like, sweet stuff, mitiai we call it. Like,
yep.
You're getting boxes from everybody.
Always check the expiry date on the Panettone is given to you.
We don't have expiry dates. You just bite into it and realize, yeah, this ain't it anymore.
This ain't fresh.
It's been sitting around for a while.
It's that time of year. Coming up, our NFL power rankings, plus not saying, just saying, on the People's Show, Sportsnet 650. January 2nd. You know what's on January 2nd, Randeep?
Oh, I know.
Maybe still in recovery for some.
It's actually a great way to recover from New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Getting together with your close friends from the People's Show Fantasy Football League.
Yep.
January 2nd, Milltown Bar and Grill.
Yep.
One of my favorite spots in the city.
Yep.
Just near the airport, kind of near the river there as well, just near the water. And we're going to get together with not only members of that fantasy football league.
Yep.
Also, anybody is welcome. Any members of the People Show, any members of
Sportsnet, anybody and everybody.
Sportsnet 650 listeners, if you're new to the station, if you've been loyal for years, come on down to Milltown Bar and Grill, January 2nd, Vikings, Packers. We're having a watch party.
We're having a watch party. We'll all be there. Dan Sat, even Randeep.
Especially Randeep. That's
and
my spot,
wearing,
man.
Like, here's the big thing.
Ooh, I forgot about this.
You are going to be wearing a salmon shirt because you lost to Uncle Nelson, the uncle of one Chase Claypool, in the People's Show Fantasy League.
That's right. And you know what really ticked me off this weekend? I needed like 35 points from Leonard Fournette that week to beat Nelson.
Yeah.
He gave me 40 plus this week. The week I needed him to actually score 40 plus, he didn't do it. But this week, all of a sudden, here he is, just going off.
Now, all of a sudden,
I got to wear a salmon colored shirt. I hate the color sound.
I can't wait for that, you know? Like, are you going to wear, like, are you just going to get a golf shirt of some kind?
Okay, so the stipulation was I have to wear a salmon-colored shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no stipulation on what type of clothing, what kind of shirt it has to be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to get, and I don't think it's possible, but the most stylish salmon-colored shirt there is out there. So I'm searching.
The most stylish salmon-colored.
Tasteful.
Okay.
Tasteful.
I don't know if that exists.
I haven't found one yet.
Okay.
I'm still searching. It's like searching for the perfect Panettone, as David Pignotta was saying. It's like searching for the Holy Grail.
Yes. It's tough. You know, not all Panettone are created equal. But salmon shirts? My recommendation is to wear a salmon golf shirt. Like, find yourself a good salmon golf shirt. And then that way you can... You'll have a second wear out of it.
No, I won't.
Yeah, you
I'm
will.
I'm not going to wear salmon twice.
Yeah.
No, it's not
we'll
going
to go golfing
like
next summer and you can, we'll go golfing next summer and you can wear it.
No, you know what's going to happen?
Okay.
What's going to happen is I'm going to wear it once.
Yep.
I'm going to donate it to the Salvation Army or Big Brothers Canada or
okay.
whatever it may, you know.
Good human you are.
That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
It's going to...
You won't even wear it on a golf course?
No, man. I want to look good on a golf course.
Randy's going to show up to a golf course wearing a suit. What do you expect?
My game doesn't speak volumes, but my style does.
I'd like to see Randeep in like a Tom Kite kind of outfit with the straw hat, you know?
I was more of a like a Payne Stewart kind of getup. That was my idea of the perfect golf outfit there.
Okay. So you're not a Ricky Fowler with some funky colors and stuff like that? No. No? Okay. All right. So Milltown Bar and Grill, January 2nd with the People's Show. Vikings, Packers, final game of the NFL season. Be there. Bring in the new year with us, the People's Show, and enjoy some friends and some bevvies. All right. It's time for the NFL Power Rankings here on the People's Show. After another week of mediocrity in the NFL, where we don't know what's up from down, are we starting to find the elite tier in the NFL? It doesn't really feel like it. There is a lot of teams in the murky middle. And I feel like it was really easy for me to pick my top three. But beyond that, I start to have some trouble. And that's because I have like built-in thoughts about teams like the Rams. That should be a good team. They should be near the top of my power rankings, but they've lost three in a row. So how can we justify that? The Ravens, who I really like, but have so many injuries, it's hard to see what their ceiling is. You know, they're winning a lot of close, low-scoring, tight games. They're so well coached. They find ways to win, and that's admirable, but unless they get some of their talent back, I don't know if I see them as a big-time playoff contender. The Bills, who I think all of us had near the top of our lists. Can't really have them there. They lost Tre'Davious White. They're not the best team in their division. So some of my baked-in thoughts of who I thought should be at the top of my list, well, those teams have just disappointed too much in recent weeks.
Yeah, our power rankings have had more turnover than the Whitecaps from like 3 years ago. Like, yeah. It's been bad, man. Like, there's been a lot of turnover. There's been a lot of movement. But I feel like we're in a position that this week at least, it feels like there's five teams that kind of have separated themselves from the pack. Like, you can jumble up these teams in any which order you want, but there does seem to be like a tier one and a tier two. That's the only clarity I have on the situation this week. Everything else is just a mess, man.
All right, let's get to the power rankings. Number one on my list, the Green Bay Packers. Big win over the Los Angeles Rams over the weekend. And it really just solidified for me that right now, I think this is the best team in football. With the way Aaron Rodgers is going, the way that defense can cause issues, can create turnovers, Packers are number one for me.
Okay, Green Bay. And okay, I still have questions about this team. But then again, there's a lot of questions about every single NFL team. So I get it. I'm still waiting for them to kind of, at some point, show us that that defense is going to drop off yet again. But to me, hey, they're not number one on my list. But I can understand why you're making that argument. They're a consensus number one or two, number one or number two in most power rankings. So
they should be number one. I don't know who else you would put.
I'm going with the defending champs. I got the Buccaneers at number one. And that win this past weekend was impressive reach. It didn't look good in the first half. But what did we see? And I mentioned Lenny Fournette a little bit earlier on, but he has become a key piece for this team. And in a lot of ways, you need players like that that can pick up after maybe your quarterback's not having the strongest game. Maybe you're in a situation where your defense isn't at the strongest level that they've been in the last 2 years. The Bucs and the way that they find ways to win games and the multiple ways, I give that respect. So to me, this is a team that's going to get better with time. As we saw last year, I put a lot of stock into that win to come back against the Colts, against a team that, you know, the week before, just ran all over the Buffalo Bills, and the Buccaneers were in the danger of that happening to them as well. What happened, though? They stormed back, and they punched the Colts in the face.
Yep.
I appreciate that effort, and I think they're actually going to come back and be stronger as this season goes. So I got the Bucs at number one.
It was a quality win at Indianapolis, even though if it wasn't pretty the whole way through. They've got Atlanta next week. I see the Bucs probably cruising to the playoffs, especially with the way the Saints have dropped off. I've got them number two on my list. Still worried about their secondary. You know, when Carson Wentz is tearing you up in the secondary and he's, you know, whipping the ball all over the place to Jack Doyle, of all people, like, you know, there's some concerns there. I'm sorry. I could have used a little bit more from Michael Pittman, but that's just a personal bias given he's on a big-time fantasy team for me and laid an absolute dud. But Tampa Bay's defense is still got to be a concern, especially with the way Aaron Rodgers is playing in that Green Bay Packers. Feels like, to me, the Packers, who are still undefeated at home, the road to the Super Bowl through the NFC goes through Green Bay. It did last year, too. Tampa Bay made it work. Can they do it a second year in a row? Right now, I rank the Packers just ahead of those Bucks.
Okay, so we're in a bit of a contrast there. I got the Packers at number two, but
Ooh,
this is
coming around on Green Bay.
Hey, listen, they're winning games. They're finding ways to win, and their defense has played well. You know, what's the great strength of Aaron Rodgers is that, A, he's amazing, one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen, but he also makes players that are good that much better.
Yeah,
he makes them relevant, and we saw that with, you know, Randall Cobb, before he got injured, he was a player that Aaron Rodgers wanted in Green Bay. It's working out pretty decently. That defense is playing well. A.J. Dillon is stepping up. So as this goes on, yeah, Green Bay is definitely separating themselves. And it does matter that they beat the Rams, a team that, you know, I believed in up until the last couple of weeks. But your record is what you show. And as of right now, the Rams are falling. And they got smacked in the face by the Green Bay Packers. That does matter here. That's why they're number two.
Number three, I've got the Kansas City Chiefs. I know they were off this week, but hey, they started to figure it out as the season has gone along. And I don't know how you can't look at them in the AFC where who's their biggest contender? The Patriots as the number one contender in the AFC now to the Chiefs. It's not the Bills with the injuries they've had, the injuries to the Baltimore Ravens. Not the Chargers anymore. The Chiefs are, again, for me, the top team in the AFC. Love what their pass rush has been doing the last few weeks. Love the way Patrick Mahomes is starting to figure it out and getting back to norm. Chiefs are number one for me in the AFC. That has them number three in my power rankings.
Okay, number three is the team that everybody forgets about because they still have a 9-2 record. It's the Arizona Cardinals. They also had a bye week. They were higher up in my rankings. I'm not going to keep them up there because a couple of other teams did some really good work this week. But the Cardinals still deserve some respect on their name. They're still now, as we see, the best team in that division. The Seahawks, I should mention, are terrible, by the way. I don't know if you watched that game this weekend, Reach, but they stink. The Rams are falling. And the Niners, they're putting up a good fight. But we know who the top dog in this division is. Arizona Cardinals, they are the ones that deserve some love. Number three for me.
Why'd you have to bring up the Seahawks?
Because they stink.
But do you know why they stink?
Every reason on that team right now. You're going to say Russell Wilson.
There's a lot wrong. But Russell Wilson's like continues to be really bad.
Okay, should he be playing is my question then. Probably not.
I don't know. Like, shut him down if that's what it is.
That's on Pete.
Like, Russ, why can't you just throw a pass and complete it? I know that seems simple. But, I mean, how many times are we going to watch Russell Wilson overthrow somebody over the last 3 weeks? It was unbelievable. Like, and he's got so many guys open. It's frustrating.
As right you now. Mentioned that, Mike G., loyal listener to the station and the People Show, sends me a tweet. No win November. There are four teams. The Lions, the Chargers, the Saints, and yes, your mighty Seahawks. No wins in November.
No win November.
Yeah.
At least they got a first round. No, they don't. Brighter days ahead for the Seattle Seahawks. I hope. I do hope. At least they're not even better than the Dolphins anymore. I've got the Cardinals at number four on my list. Where are you going?
I'm going Patriots. They're moving up. I've got them as the top AFC team in my rankings.
Ahead of the Chiefs.
That defense is scary. That run game is scary. They win in the trenches. The Chiefs.
I mean, like, the Titans' offense without Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, and Julio Jones is like, I don't know. It's not a real offense.
No,
it's not. Like, Ryan Tannehill is not going to be able to overcome those sorts of absences in that offense, and we've seen it going back a few weeks now. So I don't know if it's as impressive of a win as it may seem, given the Titans' record.
But they've also won a number of games, 6 in a row now as well. So
yep.
They're starting to build some confidence, and you have faith in Belichick. The reason I have them ahead of the Chiefs, I am not elevating a team off a bye week. I had the Chiefs at number 5 last week. The Patriots had an impact win. The Chiefs, yes, that offense has got a highest of ceilings. That defense has improved, but I'm not elevating a team coming off a bye week. That's not how it works. I got the Chiefs at 5, though.
I've got the Patriots at number 5, and I just can't believe how good this team has turned out to be. Now, look, they're over their 6-game win streak. They've beaten the Chargers, pretty good team. They've beaten the Browns. Titans were a pretty good team. 2 of their next 3 games are against the Bills. Their next 3 games are against the Bills, at the Bills, at the Colts, and then home to the Bills. So these next 3 weeks, I think, really do determine how for real the Patriots are in these 2 games against the Bills. I mean, could you ask for a better setup over these next few weeks? It's going to be massive for the Bills, and it's hard not to bet on Bill Belichick right now.
One thing to mention, though, when the Bills are playing a running back not named Jonathan Taylor or Derrick Henry, they do very well against the run. Very well against the run. So how does that work against the Patriots coming up? Because we know that they're, you know, they win in the trenches, their O-line in their run game. So that will be an interesting matchup, offense versus defense.
It is People's Show, Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. Rizzo from the Ridge, the defending champion of, the Reach Deep Fantasy Pool, which is now the People's Show Fantasy Football
League. It's evolved into something new.
Don't pile on Dan, Randeep. Seahawks lost, Dolphins won, and he lost by a Monday night miracle to me in the Fantasy League.
Ooh, that's rough. That's rough.
Was not pretty.
Oh, I absolutely annihilated Mike G.
I thought I was in the clear. And then all of a sudden, Antonio Gibson, with a night of all nights, comes back to win 4 Rizzo from the Ridge over me.
Congrats to Rizzo.
Not great. I needed that one for the playoff push in any case. All right. That's your Week 13 NFL Power Rankings. It's time for Not Saying, Just Saying on the People's Show. I'm not saying golf is in a tough spot. I'm just saying I will sorely miss Tiger Woods being a full-time PGA-er, even though it's really not been a full-time PGA guy for the last 10 years.
Yeah, there was at least a little bit of hope previously where you said maybe, just
you know,
maybe.
Like, I remember when we talked about it after the Masters, when he won, and I said, you know what, I'm fine. I'm good now, you know? Like, I saw it again, and I was happy, loved it, but yet you knew it was hard to see him go back to being dominant Tiger. It was impossible to see him go back to being dominant Tiger. But hearing him say the words, I'm never going to be full-time on the PGA ever again, it was still a hard listen with his interview with Golf Digest.
Absolutely. And anytime a great player, you know, makes that turn, and obviously there's been a lot that's going on in Tiger Woods' life with the most recent, you know, surgeries and the accident and all that.
Even his latest comeback, man. The guy has just had some...
It's been up, down, up, down. But it is, once that your favorite athlete kind of makes that that turn and saying, okay, this is the back nine or the back five or whatever you want to call it of his career. Yeah, man, it kind of reminds me, it's the Jordan with the Wizards phase. It kind of has that feel to it at this point in time. I got one here.
Okay.
I'm not saying going all in is bad. I'm just saying it hasn't worked out for the Canucks and the LA Rams this year. It's just
really
not
hasn't.
A good look. Just
no.
Maybe don't go all in. Maybe just go like, you know.
Go
just,
half?
Yeah, half measures.
Okay. You seem like an all-in guy, though.
I am, but I'm reconsidering based off of, you know how I felt about the LA Rams a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now Matt Stafford has turned into Jared Goff.
I equate holiday season with poker season. Because, like, That's when people had time off, so you'd have like late night poker games with all your buds and family. I was definitely like that guy who would get super excited for a poker night, and then like half an hour into the game, you start getting antsy and you're just going all in. You know? I wouldn't do it with like seven deuce, but like as soon as I got a decent hand, I'm like, all right, starting to get a little bored, boys. Let's go all in.
I'm very much that guy.
Yeah.
There's a reason I don't gamble as much.
This one. Ryan and Kitts. I'm not saying Randeep needs to wear a salmon-colored shirt. I'm just saying he should get a salmon-colored shirt with the Richie O'Chara photo screened onto the front. Checkmate.
All right. The mind is racing now. Maybe there's some fun ways I can go about this. We've also got Photoshops popping up on Twitter. Brian from Brook Mountain has me Photoshopped on a salmon-colored shirt.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't look that bad.
It's not pink. It's salmon.
It's salmon. Oh, this one's definitely salmon. We got Bob and Gibson's.
Yep.
Not saying, just saying. The Seahawks on third down are as predictable as the Canucks on the PK. Sack for the Seahawks and a goal for the Canucks. A goal against.
Yep. It's not great. I mean, I was saying it back to last year. Like, Russ just hangs on to the ball. He's like he can't see over the offensive line anymore. Yep.
We got this one coming from Johnny Candace, directing it at you.
Johnny.
Doesn't like your additions to a sandwich. I'm not saying sun-dried tomatoes are bad. I'm just saying they're as good as an add-on as Besser is this season. So implying not
good.
That's
a trash take, okay? Sun-dried tomatoes are a fantastic, fantastic addition to any salad or sandwich.
I love disagreeing with Riccio. Not here. He's right.
Sun-dried tomatoes are fantastic. Right. You put them in a nice panino. Oh, buddy.
The Canucks are in Ottawa right now. When I lived out there, there's a place called Dirienzo's. Dirienzo's.
Dirienzo, huh?
Elite sandwich with sun-dried tomatoes on it.
Yeah? Oh, buddy. I put sun-dried tomatoes on anything right now. Just a big kick I'm on.
That's a weird kick.
I'm not saying the Yankees are in trouble. I'm just saying, have you seen the Blue Jays offseason so far?
Oh, are you going to be that guy? Winning in the offseason?
Huh?
Are you going to be that guy?
Huh? Kevin Gossman?
See, this is why Blue Jays fans are so predictable.
Carlos Baerga linking Freddie Freeman to the Blue Jays?
This is why Blue Jays fans are so predictable. When the Yankees spend money, they're saying, see, you're buying the championship. And when they don't,
I never said that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I got angry.
And when they don't spend money, all of a sudden, you're not spending money. What's going on? You guys suck.
If anything, I got angry that the Yankees have not only continued to spend money, but now they spend it smartly. And it's very frustrating. All right, that's not saying, just saying. Don't have time anymore. Maybe we'll get to a few more after the break. But Harmon Dial will join us. Elias Pettersson, is he fixed? Is he now just the most talented third-line center in all of hockey? We'll discuss. Next, Harmon Dial. Dial.
Dial.
Dial. On Sportsnet 650.